Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 4 of Keeping a Notebook, a podcast on writing. I'm Nina LaCour. Before I begin, I want to let you know that enrollment for my online class, The Slow Novel Lab, will begin tomorrow, Tuesday, the 20th of November. The class runs for the month of January, and I'll tell you more about it at the end of this episode. You can also go to my website, ninalacour.com, for more details. On to the show. The first short story I remember writing was in response to a fifth grade assignment. Back then, I loved romantic books like Anne of Green Gables and The Secret Garden and Little Women. I had been writing for fun ever since I could write, so to actually compose a short story for class as an assignment was thrilling. I wrote the story by hand in a notebook. It opened with an elderly woman drawing back the lace curtain of her upstairs window, looking down at the street, as a young man approached. He was to be joining her for tea, and once he entered her drawing room, the conversation would begin. I don't remember the dialogue at all, but I do know that her teacups were the hand-painted formal kind, and the flavor of tea was Earl Grey. And I know that the woman had been looking forward to the young man's arrival, and that she was going to talk to him about her life. But even more than all of that, I remember that my teacher, after she had taken our stories home over the weekend, asked me if she could read part of mine aloud to the class. I was shy when I was a kid. I know I must have blushed and slid down in my seat, but I was excited, too. I often felt slow in school, and awkward, and unnoticed. And when she asked to read my story, I knew that she was about to reveal this secret, special part of me that was a writer already. Soon, everyone would know that I had talent. She took my notebook, and she read about the lace curtains, and the view of the street, and the pretty teacups, and the Earl Grey. And then she closed the notebook and told the class that the opening of my story was an example of too much detail. I was crushed, of course, but that's not what this episode is about. This is about the lace curtains and the tea, about the way I saw the world when I was in fifth grade. Back then, my best friend and I spent most of our time in one of two places, the blackberry thicket behind her apartment building and the creek behind mine. We ate berries until our fingertips turned purple, and we read and wrote poetry and drew on the shore of the creek, listening to the rushing water, sometimes venturing to a place we called the waterfall, which was in reality a slab of concrete that dropped off, redirecting the water through a tunnel. The concrete didn't matter to us. We only saw the ferns and the mosses. We turned our suburban town into a place worthy of Anne of Green Gables. We turned every garden secret. Of course, by the time high school started, everything had changed. I still went down to the creek sometimes, but didn't see the world in such a magical way. And I didn't try to write like Lucy Maud Montgomery anymore, either. By that time, I had turned to Raymond Carver, the short story writer and poet, for inspiration. I went from writing detailed descriptions to focusing on dialogue and tension between characters. Despite its rolling hills and old trees, I no longer saw my hometown as beautiful. I wrote many scenes set outside the 7-Eleven. As I'm remembering all of this right now, I'm realizing that a novel I'm currently working on has lace curtains and ferns and mosses and a 7-Eleven. Maybe that's what happens as we keep living and seeing and working. We find that we contain all of our past selves with all of their ways of looking at the world. And when we enter that space of creation, we never know what will be offered up to us. We just accept it and say thank you to the child in us who showed us beauty in spite of concrete, and the teenager in us who shows us the yearning of a night spent under the fluorescent lit sign of a convenience store, and the adult in us who drives into our hometown after several years away and thinks, oh, it certainly isn't a perfect place, but it is awfully pretty. Here's something that Raymond Carver wrote in his essay On Writing, published in the Mississippi Review in 1985. Some writers have a bunch of talent. I don't know any writers who are without it. But a unique and exact way of looking at things and finding the right context for expressing that way of looking, that's something else. He goes on to say, every great or even every very good writer makes the world over according to his own specifications. It's akin to style, what I'm talking about, but it isn't style alone. It is the writer's particular and unmistakable signature on everything he writes. It is his world and no other. This is one of the things that distinguishes one writer from another. Not talent, there's plenty of that around. But a writer who has some special way of looking at things and who gives artistic expression to that way of looking. That writer may be around for a very long time. This special way of looking is how Raymond Carver was able to write such resonant stories about a boy and a girl buying a bed at a yard sale or two couples talking over dinner. It's why I read and reread them, trying to learn his secrets. Until, years later, I realized that we all need to look through our own eyes in order to tell our stories. I have my own way of looking at the world. You have your own way, too. And even though so much is involved in writing a good story, our ways of looking are what allow there to exist innumerable novels about coming of age, or marriage, or grief. Your childhood story might take place in the desert or in a vibrant, crowded city, while mine takes place behind an apartment complex in a California suburb. In the mornings, my daughter and I often look out of the bedroom window. She sees the flowers blooming and the birds pecking at the grass. I see my writing studio waiting for me and a garden that needs weeding. If we were to write stories of that same view, they would be about different things altogether. Plenty of times, I've worried that my particular way of looking at the world won't be of interest to other people. But after a lot of practice and experimentation, I've been able to dispel that worry for the most part. Every time I choose to focus on something small, I'm making a choice to trust my way of seeing. I had never trusted my vision more so than in my novel, We Are Okay. I still remember when I got the idea to write about two of my characters brushing their teeth. I rushed for the notebook and pen, certain I was onto something. You would have thought I had come up with a very big idea, but what I really had come up with was this scene. Sometime later, we stand side by side at the sinks in the bathroom. We look tired and something else, too. It takes me a minute to identify it. And then I know. We look young. Mabel smears toothpaste onto her toothbrush. She hands me the tube. She doesn't say, here you go. I don't say, thank you. I brush in the circular way you're supposed to. Mabel brushes back and forth, hard. I watch my reflection and concentrate on giving each tooth enough time. Standing like this in Mabel's bathroom back home, we would never have been silent. There were always millions of things to talk about, each topic pressing in so that our conversations rarely began and ended, but rather began and were interrupted and continued, strands of thoughts that got pushed aside and picked up later. If our past selves got a glimpse of us now, what would they make of us? Our bodies are the same, but there's a heaviness in Mabel's shoulders, a weariness in the way my hip leans against the counter. A puffiness around her eyes, a darkness under mine. But more than those things, there's the separateness of us. She spits into the sink. I spit into the sink. We rinse our brushes, tap, tap, in close succession. Both faucets run as we splash our faces. I don't know what she's thinking about. I can't even guess. I'm pretty sure that my fifth grade teacher would not have appreciated so many sentences devoted to dental hygiene. I should mention that I harbor no ill will toward this teacher. She was a perfectly kind person, and I imagine she said some nice things about my story, too. And she taught me something important very early, which is that the things we create will resonate with some people and not with others. Even back then, in spite of my humiliation, I remained in love with my description of the woman waiting for her guest to arrive. I can picture it still. And likewise, I'm sure plenty of readers find it absurd to include toothbrushing in a novel. But for me, it's a way to show layers of intimacy, a way of slowing time, a way of taking a pause after a series of emotionally charged scenes. It's my way of looking at the world. Let's all go deep inside ourselves to tell stories in the way that only we can. Okay, now for a writing exercise. I'm going to offer you all a sneak peek at one of the daily lessons from my class, and it seems appropriate, given today's topic, to choose one about setting. Here it goes. Setting is one of my favorite elements of fiction. In the family of fictional elements, it often takes the role of the quieter sister, holding plot and character and theme together without asking for much credit. But a novel demands that you orient your reader in an unfamiliar world, the world of your characters, and establishing a strong sense of place is an essential part of that. Identify the most prominent recurring setting in your novel. A home, a bedroom, a town, a classroom, a car, a park, wherever it is that your character will return to time and again. Brainstorm a description of the place. Not everything you write here will need to show up in your novel, but it's important for you to know this space intimately. Now that you have a clear picture of your primary setting, think about how it will change over the course of your story as your character evolves and the events of the novel unfold. Focus not only on the physical details, but also on your character's perception of the place. Does a room that feels safe and cozy at first grow to feel oppressive? Does a new town that initially looks ugly to your character become beautiful to him by the end? One of my favorite books to illustrate this concept is The Lion and the Bird by Marianne Dubuc. It's the story of a lion who finds an injured bird outside his house and cares for him over the winter. We see many drawings of the outside of the house as the seasons change, and each illustration has a different feeling, sometimes of warmth, sometimes of loneliness. It's a beautiful story and a perfect example of how setting can be used as an anchor. So as I said, this is an exercise from my class, the Slow Novel Lab. Writers wake up to an email in their inbox each weekday morning with an assignment like this one. There is also a private forum for posting celebrations and commiserations, and a place to share short excerpts from your works in progress. You can also tune in to weekly video calls with me, where I'll answer writing questions from current students, or you can watch the recording later if you aren't able to make it live. The whole class is aimed at helping you develop your novel in an intentional, intuitive, and unhurried way, where the emphasis is not on word count, but rather on exploration and dedication to the practice of writing, that I hope will serve students far beyond the month we spend together. Just so you know, the November session filled up really fast. The January class will be bigger, but because I want to be able to personally answer students' questions throughout the month, spaces are still limited. So if you're interested in signing up, I suggest doing it soon. Thank you, as always, so much for listening. If you enjoyed this, I would love it if you shared it with a friend and gave it a rating and review so that other people can find it too. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Nina_LaCour and on my website, ninalacour.com. I'd love to hear from you. Whatever you create this week, I hope you embrace your singular way of seeing the world. I'll be back on Monday with the next episode.